And subject is a small one called samsara. Some people new to meditation may have arrived here thinking that what's going to happen is some nice music, put a candle, space out, and grow some wings and gently fly off into space, like all the New Age journals might imagine. And then we find that we sit here minding our own business, quite doing nothing, and the back hurts, and the knees hurt, and the neck hurts, and we don't know why we're here, and it's boring. And really, we're not doing anything. We're just minding our own business, sitting here. But on the other hand, I'm sure that in this same room, there are others that are feeling a great deal of quietness and peace, and maybe joy. And maybe in the same person, this changes from 1 hour to the next, and 1 minute, oh, my expectations are being fulfilled, and the next minute, oh no, my back, my this, my that, and all the thoughts coming, and it's no good. And it might change in 5 minutes, especially when we go out and have a nice supper, and everything looks totally different. Especially our kitchen here. So I think we can learn a lot from this as we think about our experience in this just one day. Never mind 1 hour, or even 1 minute. That things change a lot in a way that we can't control, otherwise we'd be happy and joyful all the time. And clearly it's not happening. Secondly, we're busy with that constantly. Wanting to be happy, not wanting to be unhappy, or not wanting the pain, or wanting more, or wanting less, and commenting on it, and expecting it to be better, or expecting it to be worse. We are busy with it. And I think many of us experience that in this one day of practice. And thirdly, there's something about the wanting to create conditions for us to be happy. That we can't help trying to design the situation to make us more happy. To want an extra bit of this, or want to compensate with some more jam and another cup of tea, and want to try and make the conditions better for us, and want to come to a meditation course so that our life perhaps is more free of stress and pressure. And these are just the senses, the feelings that we have in one day. Our desire and our need to control the conditions so that we are happier and better off, and life is better for us. And we have to think a little bit about that. Just to get out of the mood of I want to be happy, or magiyali, I need to be, or it should happen like this or like that. And just think a little bit how we are busy with trying to control the conditions. And think about our ordinary life. This is our life. This is day-to-day life. We go to work to get money. We try and build a family. We have the ideal partnership. We try and improve relationships with our mother, our father. We try and sort things out with ourselves and with our friends, and it doesn't quite work, so we're busy with that, and we're busy with getting food in the fridge, in the tummy, and we are very, very busy in our life, trying to create conditions where we feel good, feel better, get on, progress, develop, etc. And this creates a lot of pressure. And because everybody is doing it, the whole basically herd of human beings and animals is doing it, we feel, well, that's life. Because that's what's happening. And sometimes we might question, in the middle of all this story, in the middle of the difficulties of relationships, which really should work out because there are people close to us, and they don't. Why are we so stuck? Why is it that it keeps happening like that? Why is it that I sit here doing nothing and just sitting quietly and pain comes? But even if I'm a ballet dancer and I've done yoga 10 years, it still comes. Why? What's going on? And we sometimes can feel that a little bit we're in a prison, and we spend our time rearranging the furniture. We're a little bit in a box. Our life is a bit constructed, and we're in this prison somehow arranging the furniture. And it's exhausting. And the thing is that it happens from the moment that we're born. I have a new granddaughter, and I'm watching her grow, and she is trying to get there very, very fast. I can see the way she's really trying to become conditioned very quickly. She's like totally open. And the parents are encouraging, oh, you can crawl already 4 months. Wow, look at this. And it's like encouragement. Yeah, wow, get into it fast. This life of being conditioned, being into creating the conditions, learning, growing, being somebody, being a person, very fast. I remember when I was around 5 or 6 years old, I had one terrible night, and I can feel it until today in my body, this memory. I was screaming and crying and crying, and nobody could comfort me. I had a kind of nanny, Matapelet, and she failed, my parents failed. Get away, I don't want to see you. And I just crying. Complete hysterics. And I remember very well what it was about. It was about not wanting to grow up. I didn't like the story that I was growing up into. I just suddenly realized what was happening. That I was kind of inevitably constructed. Something was constructing me to be like them, the adults. Something was making me like that, and I didn't want it to happen. I couldn't see any way out. I saw the whole process happening. And it was absolutely terrifying. Well, of course, I adjusted to it, and here I am, like everybody else. We can't stop it. The baby can't say, stop, stop, and the mother and the parents can't say, stop, you know, put on the brakes, just be a baby and don't grow up, and you know, stop there, and it doesn't work. There's something inevitable about this process. And there's something inevitable, that's, shall we say, on the macro level of our life. And on the micro level of sitting here 1 minute and a little bit watching where we are, there's something inevitable that we can't control. Our thoughts, whether we like it or not, will just come, keep coming one after another, and we don't like them, or we do like them, or we want another ones, but we can't stop the chain. Another one comes, and another one comes. It's like each one makes room for the next. It's just kind of, if I'm not a bit of space, and then, you know, another one comes, usually coming in chains. And we're not in control of that either. And there's something about the whole picture that really we have to ask, well, you know, what's happening? What's in control? Who's in control here? What's going on with our life? And what are we going to do about that? Welcome to samsara. That is what it is. It's defined and described as a kind of endless process of going around and around and around and around, and not being able to stop the wheel. It's often called the wheel of samsara. not being able to get off the wheel, a bit like a kind of a, one of these little animals in the cage, hamsters, that they just go around in them, or mice, they just keep going around in the wheel. It's a bit like that. And this sense of round and around and around, which is both in our life and maybe beyond our life. Maybe there's something there which is beyond one life and to do with lives. There's a very similar but a different metaphor in Jewish mysticism, in the Kabbalah, which talks about the world being made through contraction. That it is contraction, tzimtzum, which actually makes the world. The world is the result of a kind of a contraction of something infinite. And we are the result of something contracted, the contraction of something infinite. And it's very similar in the Buddhist language. A sense of formation in order to be born, in order to be alive. There's something in the nature of being alive which is contracted, which has in it suffering. As a story in Midrash, a Jewish story, that one day people managed to close the devil on the other side in a box and lock him in. And everyone felt great relief, except that on that day no eggs were laid. No chicken laid any eggs. So they quickly released the devil again, because the world stops. And this is samsara. In a way, in the Buddhist language, samsara is from beginningless time. There is no origin to it. It is an endlessness. It is there from the beginning of time, and the opposite of samsara, namely nirvana, freedom, ultimate freedom, is there from the beginning of time too. So both of them, samsara is not a problem, in other words. It's not that we can expect a blissful, Olam Haba or in any other place, that we can stop samsara and there'll be endless nirvana, release, freedom. There's something about them being together. They're both there from the beginning of time. They're both inherent in reality. And I was in the dentist the other day, and my dentist looked, was just leaving the dentist, Rafa Shinai, and he looked at my teeth and he said, Yatsiv aval dafuk. And I thought, that's samsara. A major problem, but there from the beginning of time. So we can't work it out. There's not something there that we can work out to become permanently happy. It's in the nature of reality. It's in the creation of the world. We can't just sort of, and the philosophers have tried through the ages to work out the problem of human suffering and evil. You know, the book of Eov is this. And in, you can't work it out, never mind how much philosophy, how much human intelligence, how much thinking process you go through, it is not workable. You can't work it out. Like in the end, Eov just sort of gives up and says, you know, show me. And he was shown play of life. Basically, he was shown the play of life and told, get out of yourself. This human-centered view. Because in the human-centered view, that's the problem. So we can't work this out. We can't work out by a process of thinking, rationalizing, trying to understand. We can't get out of this issue. It's bigger than us. But what we can do is find ways which are out of the usual process of mind. It is mind, it's our usual mind that has to live this samsaric life and says, oh, I want to be happy, I want to change my conditions, and I want to rearrange the furniture. And it's, we can get out of that usual mind, that mind state, and reach another way of looking at this whole picture. And I think that is the purpose of the spiritual life. The spiritual life is a way, in a sense, of coming out of the mindset, of coming out of the usual thoughts, of coming out of the usual thinking, I need this and I don't need this, and this hurts me and this doesn't hurt me, and I want it like that, and I want it something else, and the whole of life like that. Getting out of that, saying, that won't solve the problem. So what will? Getting out of the mind somewhere else. And somewhere else is our ability to look at the mind. In a very simple formula, there's many, many ways in which this is described in the tradition, but one way which a very early formulation of the spiritual life is in three words. Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. Sila, meaning right living. Samadhi, meaning meditation and concentration and awareness. And Panya, meaning wisdom, which is transcendental wisdom. And that's an ancient formula, but I think for the purposes of us to understand the path, it's quite concise. Sila, morality, right action. And I just want to open it up. I'm not going to talk about it too much now. And we paid attention to it right at the beginning of the course in a few words. But it is something which is worth remembering as a fundamental ground of the spiritual path. It's the ground that says that unless we have sila, we can try and row the boat as much as possible, but it's still tied to the bank. It doesn't move. Because sila, that is morality, which we can translate as non-harming, is deep. It's an exploration. Just think about yourself in these days together. If you say to yourself, how can I find a way that in these days I don't do harm to anybody and nor to myself? So where is the line? Is it another sweet and jam on the bread and so on to looking after myself? Is it denial? Is it suffering? Is it paying attention to others? Do I spend all my time when I'm walking meditation making sure I don't tread on ants? What is non-harming? It's a question. So morality is a sensitivity. Sila is a sensitivity. It's a sensitivity to respect and to cherish, in a way, to cherish, to find the preciousness of life, whether it's our life or anybody else's life. And this is not easy. So, but it's a ground of our practice. And the sila, which includes non-harming, it also includes generosity, letting go, giving to another, letting someone who take our place, letting someone, generosity, giving of ourselves, for example, creates conditions for inner peace. So it's a kind of a ground. It's like laying the table. It creates conditions for inner joy. It creates conditions for inner peace, for a kind of a mind that is not full of guilt and regret and complications. And the pains. It's kind of cleaning the ground. So sila is first step. Samadhi is what we're doing here together. Samadhi is meditation. But let's formulate it a little bit more carefully. In the sense that samsara is a process of, you know, like the animal in the wheel turning the wheel, the little mouse in the wheel turning the wheel, samsara has this quality, and ordinary life has this quality of pressure, of endlessly busyness, of trying to sort things out for ourselves, of trying to create the conditions that are better for us, and samadhi is simply stopping. There's a quality of stopping. And this doesn't need us to think about, it's not a philosophical issue, it's a quality of stopping. A quality of settling down, of releasing the pressure, of ability to relax into the moment. This is where what we would call the meditation practice begins to show us in the very first, in a very delicate way, but in the first moment, begins to show us another world beyond the samsara. A world where actually I don't need to, etc. I don't need to. I can let that go. I can just be with less. Now. I can stop. And it's a very important act. And if we do it with full awareness, with full concentration, with full attention, this stopping is very special. It's just settling down into, you could call it a zero point, a kind of FS, a kind of minimal awareness inside ourselves where we need less and we're just present with life. We're just settling into life. It's a very important part of meditation. And we're doing it. When we walk, one step is an act, a whole act of rediscovering something so simple and so meaningful as one step, like the baby who takes the first step in their life. One breath is just a moment of breathing, clear, simple, doesn't need anything. It's stopping. It's being with ourselves in a much more quiet, sensitive and minimal place. And the more we can concentrate and the more we can slow down, the more we can find ourselves in a sort of place of potential, place of FS, place of silence, where samsara has no hold. It's out of the picture. Just like, let me get off. I want to get off this boat. I want to get off this train. We just get out of the train. The train can carry on and we stand on the platform. One breath. One step. One moment. One quiet moment when we're holding a cup of tea in our hands and we're just here. The pressure is off. The dachas, the pressure, the compulsion to do, to change, to be, to act, to be somebody, to be better, the compulsion is off. And it's very valuable. And this is partly what we're doing here in our practice. We need to relax. Stopping also implies relaxing. Many of us may have a tendency to want to push ourselves to achieve something, to achieve more in our practice today, in these days. But we should remember that when we push ourselves, it's the habit of samsara that we're pushing ourselves all our life and we keep pushing ourselves when we sit down to meditate. It's just the habit of samsara, and maybe even if mentioning samsara is enough to help you and us to be a little bit relaxed about it and say, oh yeah, that's samsara, that's the habit energy working through me, I'm still pushing myself to breathe another breath, it's not working, it's less working, it's not working, I want to sit longer, oh my back's hurting, but I'm... knowing that all of that is the pressure, the habit energy of samsara. And so we can say, okay, it's fair enough. It's happening to me. That's what it is. All right. And in the middle of that, slowly, slowly, we are stopping. We are relaxing. As much as we can be with one breath completely, with one, as I say, standing with a cup of tea, with one moment where we're walking and we feel ourselves on the earth, touching the earth in front of a tree, feeling some quietness, some silence. Here I am, touching the earth. It's so simple. At that moment, we're out of the picture of samsara. We're just out of the picture. And as I said, it's important to relax. So if you feel under too much pressure, too much habit energy, just remember now and then, relax. We're there, but we can relax. We can be soft with ourselves. We're not trying again to win the Tour de France here. That's the habit energy. So relax. Keep the practice, relax. Sometimes I feel that this aspect of the practice, that is the aspect of quietening down and calming down and settling down into the moment by moment reality, which is what we're doing with the breath, what we're doing with the walking. It's a training to settle down. And sometimes I see this as like settling down into an armchair. We settle down into an armchair from which we can watch samsara. So settling down to a nice, to a sort of a quiet place, which can be where, which can be just where we sit. We settle down and we watch the movie. The movie of life, the movie of the whole story. So our ability to watch the movie, in a way, is the third part. Sila, Samadhi and Panya, wisdom. The third part is our ability to be aware. Is the part of awakening. Beyond concepts, beyond philosophy, beyond the mind, usual mind habits, ability to be aware, to expand a little bit our horizon, our awareness, our ability to contain all of this picture, samsara, our ordinary life, the pressures that we feel, the life that keeps happening to us, our ability to contain that in a way to step outside it and know. All really we have to do, in a way, is know. In a certain way, that is the only thing we need to do. Knowing. Panya is a kind of knowing. And knowing not by concepts. And we don't need to write philosophical papers and books. It's just a sense of knowing. And the knowing, we need, for this knowing, we need steadiness, we need some quietness. We can't really know our life under pressure. So we need to take off the pressure, to be quiet for this, to be steady, to find some samadhi, and then the knowing arises. The knowing is in the knowing of where we are at each moment. It's in being aware, being mindful, looking ourselves in the eyes, looking at other people in the eyes, really seeing from intuitive awareness where we are, where do we stand, what is happening to us, what is going through our mind. What is the movie? What's the soap opera that's of our life? What is going on? It's that knowing, which is panya, which is the third part, which is the transformative part of the practice, of the spiritual practice. Knowing and being intimate, and sometimes the word intimacy is used, because a lot of our habits of ordinary life create a distance between us and reality. The intimacy is when we really feel connected to that moment of the cup of tea in our hand. There is intimacy in that. When we are connected with the thoughts passing through our mind and we just see them, they're like bubbles that just come and float away. That's intimacy. And that changes things. And this intimacy that we have with our inner life and outer life changes things. We may see, we may feel, for example, I don't like not talking. Everyone becomes a stranger. People locked in themselves. But just think for a minute. If you see and you know and you begin to see people and see faces and see movements and see body language, you can feel intimacy to people in a completely new way. And this is a good example of how we can get out of the habit energy. The habit energy says talking is communication and relationship. That's the habit of normal life. But knowing, if we know a bit deeper, we have more intimacy, suddenly we can relate in a completely different way. Just feeling people, feeling each other, feeling ourselves, knowing where we are at each moment. So the punya, the side of punya, is the side of transformation. And the transformation makes our passage in samsara freer and lighter and easier all the time. And so for us here, the spiritual life is a life of transformation. It's not a life for us to sort of say, I want to be happier. Because wanting to be happier is the same samsara that we find ourselves trapped by. It's saying, the pressure to be happy is the problem. And I know it in me. And that knowing switches the switch completely. I don't need to pressure myself to be happy. What a relief. That's a knowing. That's a sort of knowing, a sort of seeing. So we can put it in the language of mindfulness. Mindfulness being full of mind. It's the other part of what we're going to be practicing more and more during these days together. We practice stopping, relaxing, quietening ourselves the first day, and then gradually during the days together, we're going to be practicing opening, seeing, knowing, and knowing in a non-conceptual way, not in the language of concepts and of standard formulae. Knowing right here, the intimacy with our life as we live it, moment by moment. There is, to give an example, quite a graphic example, there is a Greek myth, the myth of Sisyphus. And I don't know if you know the myth, but the Greek gods condemned Sisyphus to keep pushing a huge ball up a mountain. And then as soon as he got to the top of the mountain, the ball rolled down to the bottom again. And they had to start all over again. And it was a punishment from the gods. And very much this seems to me a kind of image of, very graphic image of samsara. Pushing the ball up the hill, and as soon as we got to the top, it rolls down again because the next morning we have to wake up and go to work. Push the ball up the hill, and the next morning we have to get up and go to work and earn our living again. So there's some image there of the human situation which is very graphic. And he, pushing the ball up the hill. And I wonder if Sisyphus had heard about mindfulness and understood another form of a being, and maybe this would have changed totally the punishment of the gods. What actually is in the present moment? What is he doing? He's just holding the ball and pushing, and his muscles are being used, and he's pushing, and then he watches it go down the hill again, and then he goes down. And in the present moment, there's no problem. That's what he's doing. He's pushing, he's touching, he's rolling, he feels the ball going down, he gets up again, he pushes it up, that's what he's doing. Can be doing something else. Maybe chopping vegetables in the kitchen, but he's moving the ball. In a sense, the intimacy with life takes away all that pressure of success and failure. I've got to do it, I've got to get there, I've got to push the ball up, and then it goes down, and it's a terrible tragedy. Got to start again at the beginning. And all of that mind of having to, and needing to, and pushing here, and getting, and achieving, and succeeding, and failing, all of that mind state or mindset changes with the intimacy. And it's not that you don't do things. I don't think any practitioners, Buddhist practitioners, turn into vegetables. I've not seen that. Or turn into couch potatoes and just watch TV all day. Life of activity, energy comes out. Energy is there. We are. It doesn't mean we don't act. We don't need to act. But the acting comes from a somewhat different place. With this intimacy, when you take a cup of tea, the act is a little different. You know that you're moving towards a cup of tea. You have the cup of tea in your hand and you feel the taste of it. And it's just a little different from the energy of pushing and wanting and comparing. So using this time together to expand our awareness, to expand our sensitivity, to expand our intimacy with moment by moment reality, that this thought, this step, this breath, this feeling of tiredness, this pain in the back, moment by moment reality, welcoming it, touching it, being intimate with it, and just see what happens. When touching life in this way, just see what happens. See what happens to samsara. See what happens to the usual pressures and habits that have built us, that are part of us. See what happens during the days together. And in that sense, it's an exploration, like I said yesterday, a chipus. Because everybody is in a different path and everybody will experience things slightly different. But the basic frame of sila, being aware and respectful of life, samadhi, stopping, quietening down, calming, reducing the pressure, and being present, and panya, seeing things in a different way, feeling the intimacy moment by moment, being mindful and aware, and expanding our awareness, expanding the power of our awareness to contain everything that's in our life, to contain the habit energy in samsara, to contain the good and the bad and the change and the liking and the not liking and wanting to be happy, to contain it, to be a bigger container. And so there are perhaps three keys for our practice together. Thank you.